Chapter 2.
Every room, every wall, every piece of furniture in the ruler's massive headquarters took on a whole new look to Adam. After going through the blood room and the promise room, he was a new man. What had appeared before as ordinary features of the building now shone with brilliance that surpassed anything in the Golden City. The ruler stepped into the hallway and gave a sideways nod toward the end of the hall.
"Come, we have something for you."
Adam followed, and they came to a room marked Assignments. As the ruler put his hand on the latch, Adam stepped back.
"It sounds like a hurricane in there."
The ruler smiled.
"It is, and he has a gift for you."
"He?" Adam had sensed the wind was more than a natural force, but "he?" "Are you saying the wind is a person?"
The ruler laughed. "The mighty wind is the ultimate person. He defines personhood. His power and wisdom are the source of all personalities, including yours. He is the one who brought you here and preserved your life on the way. He drew you here because he loves you."
As they entered the room, Adam expected to be pinned to the wall by the roaring gale. Instead, the power of the wind held him up and stabilized him. Just as the chain had earlier, a box materialized in the ruler's hand, wrapped in paper and a bow. He held it out to Adam.
"Open it."
His eager tone made Adam wonder if the gift was as much for the ruler as it was for Adam. Like a child on his birthday, Adam tore off the paper, revealing a hand-carved wooden chest, small enough to hold in his hand. He opened it, looked inside, frowned, and lifted questioning eyes to the ruler.
"Look again," said the ruler.
Adam felt the inside. When he withdrew his fingers, he held a pair of glasses. The thin frames had blended with the inside of the chest, and the lenses were so crystal clear they were barely visible.
"Put them on."
Adam obeyed, wondering if perhaps they would give him the clear vision of the world that the little one, Sav, had given him, but without the nearsightedness. He examined the chest in his hand. It appeared the same with or without the glasses.
"Do you still have the piece Abigail gave you?"
Adam retrieved it from his pocket, but he didn't need to read the inscription. He had it memorized. "The banquet is like a treasure hidden in a field.
Look at it through the glasses."
Adam studied the piece, as he had so many times before. "I see some colors, the same ones I saw before."
"You see the colors on the surface. Look harder."
Adam scrutinized the piece from every angle. He held it up to the light, turned it over in his hand, rubbed it with his thumb. "What am I looking for?"
"There is much more to see. Keep looking."
Adam gave up 6 times, and 6 times the ruler repeated the instruction.
"Keep looking."
It was more than an hour later when Adam finally saw something he hadn't noticed before. A thin line, barely detectable, along the left side. "Is that a crack?"
"It's a seam," said the ruler.
Adam inspected the line and realized the piece had been folded. He pulled it open. Now 4 times its original size, the piece displayed a rainbow of prismatic luminescence within the folds. Warmth filled Adam's chest. The wind swirled around him and his skin dripped with blue fluid. The ruler explained,
"Every piece of the cottage has been folded 1,000 times. Any one of my people can find a seam and discover new colors if they look hard enough. The wind will reveal it to them. But the glasses you have been given will enable you to discover many more seams than others can find. I want my people to see them. The wind gave you these glasses because your task is to show my people colors they can't find. That's the meaning of your new name.
The ruler pointed to the bar hanging from Adam's neck.
Adam took the bar between his fingers and looked again at the inscription. David.
He was a shepherd of my people. A shepherd's job is to lead, protect, and, especially, to feed my sheep. Every time you unfold a piece of the cottage and cause someone to see the colors, you are placing food from my table into their mouths.
The ruler took the bar in his fingers and flipped it over to face inward against Adam's skin.
They will know your name in time when they discover it in your character, not by reading it on an inscription.
Adam carefully placed the glasses back in the chest.
No, said the ruler. You must wear them at all times. They are your weapon, and you must become skilled in their use.
The ruler's expression darkened.
You will soon fight a battle in which your life and the lives of others will be lost if you do not master that weapon.
The ranks of warriors stood at attention before their legendary commander, Adramelech. He sensed their tension. Adramelech raised his hand and silenced the legion of evil spirits, then turned to his right and bowed. Gasps permeated the ranks as they followed his lead, showing homage as the Prince of Darkness himself approached the platform. As the prince drew near, Adramelech struggled to breathe. Every nerve alert, every muscle taut to the point of pain.
This must be what it feels like for humans when they tremble in our presence.
Warriors throughout the ranks wheezed and choked. Some vomited, even as they struggled to maintain their poise. The massive, hideous Lord of Darkness ascended the platform. His body twisted, his face distorted, emitting a toxic stench. He ran his deadly gaze across the assembled spirits as blood and bits of human flesh dripped from his fangs. Words began to slither from his throat.
Good progress has been made in our efforts to take Abigail and to keep our hold on Adam.
His gaze turned ice cold.
However, I am not satisfied. Your failures with Watson, Laith, and Kaelin are inexcusable.
Anzu shot a chastening glance at Dagon. The prince's face burned red. He fixed his gaze on Anzu and expelled a putrid stench with his slow, deliberate words.
Am I boring you, little imp?
Anzu stiffened and locked his gaze forward, avoiding eye contact with the prince. The evil behemoth returned his gaze to the ranks.
Do you take this mission lightly because you think it is merely two souls? Think again. Abigail is highly esteemed by many, many who are now vulnerable. Baxter is on the cusp of discouragement and has not sought help. Abigail is a domino in a plan that could bring down the most powerful banquet hall in the region. If this effort fails,
he added with a lowered pitch that made sweat bead on Adramelech's scaly hide.
Any warrior who has put forth anything short of full effort, I assure you, will regret his dereliction.
Immersed in the water alongside Watson, Saul lifted his charge just enough to keep his face above water. The guardian had followed the ruler's orders to the letter.
You may preserve Watson's life and minister hope and strength, but do not interfere with the test.
Bruised, battered, and barely alive, Watson drifted out of the gorge where the river opened into a calm stretch. He probed his body for broken bones and wondered how he had survived. From the center of the river, he turned to his right.
A spark of new life ignited in him when he saw the haven of the West Shore, a place of safety where he could recover in the high country. But as he started swimming in that direction, he remembered Kaylin. The image of her steeled determination at the boathouse appeared in his mind with such vividness, he wondered if perhaps a guardian was present, whispering in his ear. He stopped swimming. Should he continue the mission alone? Reaching the orchard from this end of the gorge would take significantly longer than the original journey, if it was even possible. The already slim chances of making it to Abigail in time were now even worse, especially without Laith and Kaylin. Additionally, he now understood something of the degree of opposition he faced. This had been no random storm. The king of this world was serious about keeping his hold on Abigail, and if it meant killing Watson or anyone else, he wouldn't hesitate. On the other hand, Watson loved his sister, and he had been sent by the ruler. When the ruler commissioned a task, giving up because of steep odds was not a tenable excuse. He turned toward the east bank. Fatigue and discouragement sapped the whispers of strength remaining in him. He wanted to simply go limp and float wherever the current took him. But again, he recalled Kaylin's courage. With a lurch of resolve, his mind gave the order for his legs to kick. But were they responding? Numb from the frigid water and the beating he took in the gorge, he couldn't feel his limbs. 100 times, it seemed, he ordered his body forward before his hand finally grasped a stone along the eastern shore. He rolled himself out of the river, splayed on his back, the dark clouds forming above were the last image to paint his thoughts before closing eyelids darkened his world. He woke with a chill. How long was I out? The same storm clouds swirled above. Not too long. Good. I need to get moving. Countless bruises and lacerations screamed their objections as he labored to stand. He scrambled along the rocky shore, working his way upstream to find any sign of his friends, or their remains. A familiar voice reached his ears. Watson! He lifted his eyes to a sight so welcome it brought an involuntary laugh. Kaylin! His dear friend leaned against a boulder, torn and bedraggled, her ebony hair plastered in long swaths to her face.
You made it, he said, climbing through the boulders that stood between them.
The two friends embraced as Kaylin's tears ran freely onto Watson's shoulder. As they exchanged stories, Watson shared the grim news about Laith.
It didn't look like he survived the impact. The way his arm hung off the side of that rock, he was most certainly unconscious. And the shoreline there is a sheer cliff. The only way off that rock would be to jump back into the river.
For the next several hours, they searched the banks for his body. By late afternoon, they came to the grievous conclusion that it had been swept downstream or caught up in a log jam. There was no point in staying here any longer. They had a mission to accomplish. Before them lay the long trek northward through the canyon lands and then east to the orchard. With the steep canyon walls, cliffs, and loose rock, this journey wouldn't be any easier or safer than the trip down the river had been. In addition, the heaviness of heart from the loss of their dear friend Laith had made even the easiest path feel arduous. An hour into the canyon lands, their conversation halted momentarily as they reached the far side of the gully they had been crossing. They scanned the canyon wall before them, looking for a way up. There were only 2 options, scale the cliffs to the left or crawl up the slide rock area to the right. Watson rubbed his chin.
It would be unwise for both of us to climb that slide area. Too risky.
Agreed. I have more experience with technical climbing. I'll see if I can make it up the cliff while you try the slide rock. If one of us doesn't make it, The other can continue the mission.
Kaylin drew a deep breath as she studied the wall to map a route. She had made some difficult climbs in the past, but never without ropes, and never on crumbling sandstone like this. She had to choose each handhold and foothold carefully, balancing the importance of finding solid holds with the urgency of moving quickly. If she climbed too slowly, her strength would run out before she reached the top. She stood back, picked a line, and began the climb. Thoughts of Abigail propelled her up the cliff. Why had she allowed her friend to be taken? I just sat and enjoyed the banquet while life was being destroyed. She pounded the rock face with her fist, then climbed faster. Soon she felt her muscles reaching their limit. With each new toehold, the tremble in her legs increased. She looked down. 80 feet, maybe 100. No chance of surviving a fall. Her muscles screamed for rest. She looked up. Only halfway. She could no longer be selective with her handholds. She must reach the top as quickly as possible and hope the holds would bear her weight.
Watson started up the only route that had a line of sight all the way to the top. But the slide rock soon gave way beneath him. He managed to keep his feet, but with a fresh array of bruises and cuts on his legs. His methodical, problem-solving mind analyzed every possible route. That way? No. Over there? Too steep. Could I angle across? He shook his head. All the routes within view were impossible, and the lines that looked like he might be able to handle were all obscured by shrubs. They could lead to a dead end, stranding him halfway up with no way back down. Down climbing is far more difficult than ascending. His heart pounded. If Kaylin made it up, she wouldn't be able to come back down to him. But this isn't a journey she should take on her own. I've got to find a way up.
Grasping a root, Kaylin pulled herself onto a ledge at the top of the cliff. She rolled to her back to catch her breath and allow her burning muscles to finally rest. When she had regained enough strength to walk, she stood and angled eastward along the top of the ridge to the place she expected Watson to arrive. There was no sign of him. Watson! The only response was the echo of her voice in the canyon. A lump rose in her throat.
She ran along the ridgeline, shouting for her friend, searching the ground for footprints, listening for a response. She returned to where she had come up, then closed her eyes. How far did I walk from where I left him to where I started climbing? She formed a mental picture, then paced off the distance the best she could. She looked over the side, but there were too many shrubs to see very far. The ground lay completely undisturbed. She cupped her hands around her mouth and drew the deepest breath she could take in.
Watson!